No taxation without representation. 200 years of exploitation in the capital of this nation. No representation in the capital of this nation. 200 years of exploitation. Give the people their right to vote. Someone asked me, was it true? The voting rights of the district were long overdue.
That was Sweet Honey in the Rock with Give the People the Right to Vote. Hello and welcome to Shadow Politics, an hour-long grassroots talk show which will attempt to shine a light on the issues that you care about. I'm your host, United States Senator Michael D. Brown, coming to you live from the District of Columbia, America's last colony. Along with my co-host, Maria Sanchez, we hope our show will start a dialogue with America about the issues that are important to you and affect the lives of all of us. So join in the discussion by calling in at 888-627-6008, or you can Skype your questions to BBSRadio and the number 1, BBS Radio 1. Maria's off tonight because it's Mother's Day and her sons have decided to take her out to a fancy dinner. So good job, boys. But we're lucky enough to have a special guest with us tonight, Valencia Mohammed, who's a journalist, social activist here in Washington, D.C., and a friend to everybody who longs for social justice. Valencia, I've known Valencia for several years, and she's an amazing activist, and we're happy to have her on the show. And we also have a guest, Brandon Wyatt, who we're going to talk about a project that he's working on with veterans. So first let me get Valencia on. Valencia, are you there?
Yes, I am. Yes, I am. Well, thank you for having me as your guest.
Thanks for being on the show.
And I'm a mother, too.
Yes, and so Mother's Day to you. And let's get all the mothers out of the way. Valencia, happy Mother's Day. Mrs. Brown, my wife who raised three children and did an amazing job considering the dad that she had to deal with. happy Mother's Day to you, Pat, and to my mom, Louise, who passed 45 years ago. Mom, you did a great job. Wherever you are in the universe, I think about you every day. So to all the mothers out there, happy Mother's Day. And especially to you, Valencia. Tell us, do we have our guests with us, Doug? Did we get... Okay. All right. Well, let's do a recap.
Let's just hit the brief for a minute. I was looking at some of the news on television today. They had a group of mothers from Chicago who were wearing pink outfits because of all of the violence that was going on there. They were talking about some of the record-breaking shootings and killings that they've had there this year. Thank God that was not us. You know, that was us in the 80s, but it's not us. It's not the District of Columbia today. And so, and the mothers were saying how they were wearing pink and going into some of the most crime-ridden areas and asking for peace. And once those mothers continuously went out there and told some of their heartfelt stories that they saw crime reduced in many of those areas. So thank God we don't have it here in the district, but many of you who don't know, if you ever got the chance to read my story, I've had two sons to die from gun violence here in the District of Columbia. So Mother's Day is a very, you know, it's a happy period for me and a very sad one as well. And it's sad for thousands, tens of thousands of other mothers here in the District of Columbia who have lost sons to gun violence, and just from even natural causes. So for all those mothers out there, I'm with you. Senator Brown's with you. We feel your pain, and we love you so much. And if nobody else says Happy Mother's Day to you or knows the importance of what Mother's Day actually means to us, we are mothers every day. We are mothers forever. And this is one of the things I learned when I watched my sons be buried and that dirt go over and they didn't come up like a miracle off the ground. Yes, you just say, I am a mother forever.
Well, you know, I don't know where we get the idea that men are you know, the strong people in our society, because every strong person I've ever known in my life, the strongest people I've ever known in my life have been women. And most of those women have been mothers. You know, a mother is a blessing to each and every one of us. And certainly somebody like you, Valencia, who's gone through this, you know, you have my condolences, and we're all with you. It's a horrible thing. I just sat through a trial last year with a friend of mine whose son was killed in an act of random violence. He was murdered inside his home during a robbery. Yeah, it's a horrible thing that no mother should have to go through. So our hearts go out to all the mothers out there who have had to make those sacrifices, have had to bury sons, whether they went off to war or whether they were a part of violence. And I got to tell you, we have reduced the problem here in Washington significantly, but both of my daughters live in Chicago. So it worries me. It worries me every day when one of them's home from college for the summer. But normally they both live out there. So, yeah, we got to stop the violence. It's just crazy. It's crazy. I grew up in inner city North New Jersey, and I never witnessed anything like this. There's a metal detector in every school in Washington, D.C. You know, it's really gotten out of hand. Well, I understand we have our guest with us tonight, Brandon Wyatt. Brandon, are you there?
Hey, hello. How are you?
Hey, thanks for being on the show. And first, let me tell you a little bit about Brandon. Brandon's a veteran, a combat veteran. So let's first say thank you for your service, Brandon. And beyond that, he's a lawyer, educated at one of our favorite schools here in Washington, D.C., Howard University, historically black college. I point that out because I serve the Thurgood Marshall Foundation, which raises money for HBCUs. So we love Howard University. And Brandon is currently working on a special project that he's going to tell us about with medical marijuana and veterans. So why don't you give us a little rundown? First, tell us about your service, Brandon. What branch were you in?
Well, hey, how you doing, sir?
Good.
It's an honor to be here. Thank you.
We're honored to have you.
And I always say thank you for keeping America beautiful. It's hearing stories like Miss Muhammad that we just heard that were paramount in my decision at 17 years old to join the Army from Fort Bragg, North Carolina. And so, you know, and now I guess it just takes a moment to reflect here on Mother's Day, just all the friends and folks that I know, good folks, good service members, men and women, who find this day to just be so special and so sacred. And those men and service women that we're without fans now because of war or other tragedy, you know, my heart, I can't but to think of
it. Absolutely. They're, you know, as somebody whose brother was in the military, you know, I watched his wife and his mother worry about him every day he was in uniform. So those who sit and wait also serve, and we want to thank all of them. So tell us, Brandon, what's this project you're working on?
Well, I work on a project called the Weave for Warriors Project. Crazy name, super serious aim and purpose. And it is to support veterans and their families to help reduce the opioid crisis through medicinal cannabis, exploration of other positive alternative healthcare measures. We consistently work not only to bring one of the largest collectives of veterans, period, together in the country to share cannabis, to share experiences, but also to make active changes and to speak to people like you, Your Honor, who are in the position to hear us and accurately act on different policies and considerations that affect our life.
Well, I know there's a couple of pieces of legislation that are currently before Congress. What would they do exactly? What are you trying to do exactly? Make medical marijuana available in all 50 states to veterans? Is that your aim?
I mean, if we start at the core, service of federal workforce-related injury. Being a veteran is a service to our country, and it's an honor. And as part of that covenant, what we're entitled to is to be looked after for our health care and injuries that occur while on the job. And I don't think any more or any less of anything regarding health care. If it's needed for someone's health, it's vital for their life, then the government should be able to exploit just as an individual. And if the individual is a veteran, has to go to a government healthcare system, and that's their service provider. Well, that service provider has a duty to work with them to find medication that best fits them and their lifestyle. And that should be the same across all 50 states, because as we know, it's a federal workforce injury.
And
so I remember last year, I was going to say, Senator Brown, that for 2 years I've gone to their rallies. They have, like, this is the second one that I participated in last week. And I was, you know, when you go there and you listen to veterans and you see some of the veterans in wheelchairs with, like, one leg and no arm or something like that, and you hear them talk about the fact that they had to take, they were prescribed 21 pills a day for different ailments that they have directly related to their time in service, and how some of them have attempted suicide. When he tells you about the numbers of suicides they have recorded annually of veterans, and some of this just could have been eliminated because a lot of them do not want to take all these pills. They're saying, I can't do it anymore. They don't want to get pills for pain and then something else because they're having a reaction to that medication. Then they have to take some more pills to combat those, and it just keeps on piling on and on. And the guys are saying, we can't take it anymore, not when we know that there are things that they can do naturally through cannabis that will relieve the situation. And what they're saying is, why have to look over their shoulders like Sessions looking at everybody, you know? He wants to put everybody in jail for use of even medical marijuana. What they're saying is, I am a veteran, first of all. I served my country while many of you dodged the draft. I served my country, and I served it well. And what we're saying is that we are human beings. We do not want to be a guinea pig for the pharmaceutical services. What we want is what we know to be true. We want medical marijuana, and we want the government to pay for it because we served this country, and we served it well. Am I wrong or right, Brandon? But Brandon, are you still on?
I'm listening, and that's really – no, I mean, listening to Valencia lets us know that we're doing the work of the project well, because that's exactly what the problem is. Valencia has been in tune to the issues that have gone on, in addition to being active in understanding that there are discrete policy considerations that my demographic is being exposed to that will eventually affect the rest of society. So by taking us as even a case study, such as what Johns Hopkins was supposed to do, understanding how cannabis can benefit and starting to gather together the repository of information needed to have the education needed that I think all senators and state aldermen and elected officials should have about decisions that they're making. These decisions that are being made affect individuals' lives, and they're not being thought with a full, I guess, spectrum of knowledge. And that full spectrum of knowledge starts at the beginning of Prohibition. Why? We can go into the composition of why veterans are such a great demographic. That's because we're forced to strip down and all become one color, so we eliminate race, color, and class. And then we all experience similar things and come out with the same injury. So we can take a lot of variables, take them off the table, look at the veterans' demographic, and then look at the policy considerations that have happened just between even states that have functional medical marijuana programs that still discriminate against veterans through their veteran services or public housing because they're disabled individuals. So by not looking at the full spectrum and making decisions or laws, it's kind of malfeasance.
Well, if I understand what you're saying correctly, Brandon, is that the Veterans Administration or whoever's in charge of administering these programs is standing in the way. What happens in a place like Washington, D.C., where marijuana is legal? Still, veterans can't get marijuana in the District of Columbia. They can't get it through the Veterans Administration. Is that correct?
Correct. That's correct. And I guess standing in the way is an interesting ideology. I'm not sure if they're standing anywhere. I know folks are making decisions, but they don't seem to present the full spectrum of knowledge needed to make the decisions. And part of that's because different research institutions, and most recently, like Hopkins or at times the VA, have not compiled together the data and metrics needed to even look at the current studies that show the use of cannabis in therapy or in a medical capacity, which is absolutely against the Controlled Substances Act. We can just look at Marinol. Marinol has been given out, I think, since the late 90s at the VA, and Marinol is no more than synthetic THC. Why are we giving out synthetic THC, something that we banned in D.C., when we look at the funnels and the little smoky things that
right.
kids were doing, K2 and stuff like that. So they'll give us the equivalent of K2. Let me be clear with you, Senator. They'll give us Marinol, which is functionally synthetic THC, the equivalent of a K2 synthetic marijuana, right? But they won't allow us access to the natural plant. Now,
which,
that goes against even D.C.'s laws.
Well, and correct me if I'm wrong, Marinol, the other drug you're talking about, synthetic THC, is considerably more dangerous. Didn't we have overdoses with that? Weren't there?
Yeah.
I've never heard of anybody overdosing by smoking a joint or 10
no,
joints
you're
or,
gonna
you
hear
know.
It. And you're not going to hear it. That's not what's going to happen. The consistency and things like that needed to make, I guess, just the application more equal, maybe the consumption more timetable sensitive or methods of consumption more acute are all things that are improvements. But what we've started with is a zero risk factor as far as death. So that's an interesting side effect to say that we'd rather balance out a side effect of death or suicide at all, which is what a lot of these antidepressants and opioids do. They literally say on the bottle, you know, one in 10 may experience homicidal thoughts, suicidal thoughts. Okay. Well, if you say each pill that you take has a 1 in 10 concept of experiencing homicidal, suicidal thoughts or whatever, and you take 17 of those pills, doesn't that roughly equate out to about 170% chance that the person that takes those 17 pills is going to have that side effect? Because it's too many occurrences. And that's the volume of which Valencia was speaking and why we have some of the legislation I kind of sent over in our pre-call to review and talk about, because, you know, your position and your ear and your show matter. Each time we as a Weed Forward make a contact, my job as a policy advisor makes a contact, is to leave you with a bit of information that's easily collected inside your existing database, but should fire you up a little bit more because it's more patently obvious when you look at the veterans demographic.
Well, and this is becoming more the issue and more the issue. I believe that now there are approximately 33 states that have medical marijuana. Is that right? Do you know? I mean, the majority of states have it.
There are more. There's like states like Virginia who have levels of CBD legal now. Which is not medical marijuana, but that's a big step.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, that's a huge step because it's a derivative, once again, of this natural substance that we should be able to use other derivatives of. CBD was very helpful. You know, CBD therapy may be very helpful for different conditions or different folks to detoxify their body and maybe to use in PTSD, but they won't test that either. And we have folks like Johns Hopkins who's taking a lot of money for administrative fees, what I've been told, but they didn't enroll any veterans and didn't do any part of a study, which is just hard. It's hard for a veteran to hear that, and that's why, you know, some of the bills and policies now, we're speaking out and trying to get some support for the senators and representatives that show the acumen that it takes to not be guilty of malfeasance in their position, because having the responsibility to make these decisions for our lives, for veterans' lives, and not being a veteran, one, is a big responsibility because you're not of the demographic, so that's a big responsibility and entrustment. And two, to actually still be operating on President Nixon's age-old lie that there's no medical value to marijuana, to cannabis. It's a lie. And I can't believe people are consistently letting people die over a lie.
Well,
you know, when I went
that.
To the demonstration the other day in front of John Hopkins, and I heard, you know, like, and I remember last year with DC Normal and DCMJ, in particular with Adam Eidinger, and all those people, and I saw you guys on the ground, and you were talking about, you gave an enactment of what happened to you when you were in the medical hospital and how they treated you. You know, like, it was, like, very surreal, but some of the things, the stories that veteran after veteran after veteran kept coming to the microphone and telling their personal story about what they've been going through and just the cocktail of prescriptions that they're being, you know, fed and how nobody wants to really listen to them. It's unbelievable. I'm saying until, you know, like at first I said, they got to be kind of like over-exaggerating. No, you're not. When all of a sudden you just keep hearing it over and over again from people were coming to the Washington, D.C. for your event from across the whole nation. They wanted the nation. They wanted President Obama to listen to them. They want Donald Trump to listen to them. They're trying to get people to realize this is real.
And I think that's a mistake that a lot of people make, that we assume that we treat veterans very well. But not only do we not treat them well enough, in my opinion, but we treat them differently from jurisdiction to jurisdiction. I can tell you that my brother is a combat veteran, and he is president of a college in Ohio. And believe me, they treat veterans in Ohio better than they treat veterans in Washington, D.C., which amazes me, because my personal opinion is that veterans should be treated the best here in the nation's capital. But a third of our homeless people, for example, are veterans. And that's just a national disgrace. And I can tell you that what you're saying, Brandon, really hits home with me, because when my brother retired from the Air Force, one of the things he said was one of the greatest things is that he wouldn't have to deal with the medical bureaucracy in the military anymore, that he was dealing with private insurance companies. He has a heart murmur, and he said he was happy to be out of that morass. So it's definitely VA hospitals are something that really need to be upgraded, the type of care that veterans get. So what kind of support do you have for this in Congress? The two bills that you're talking about, you referenced two bills when we communicated earlier.
H.R. 1227.
Right. And what kind of sponsorship do you have on those?
Let's go three. Let's start at the top.
Okay.
Which I think is the most important, that's H.R. 1820, the Veterans Equal Access Act. That's sponsored by Representative Earl Blumenhauer out of Oregon. It's regarding, once again, veterans' health care. This bill has been up and down. It's a consistently amended and revised process. But every time we get right to the end where this bill would allow doctors to actually speak with veterans about them using cannabis on their own, make recommendations, hey, this may be something that benefits you as opposed to these opioids or whatnot. It allows them to speak to the veterans and embrace that privacy gag order, because a lot of VA doctors do want to help us. And I've talked to them and know them, and they have a gag order on them. And so that gag order, once again, was taken down for a little while under President Obama to not punish veterans for telling their physician that they were using cannabis. That doesn't mean that they weren't randomly drug tested and their drug test results sent in and they lost their benefits or anything else. It doesn't mean that. It means that they weren't supposed to be punished for telling their doctor that they use cannabis, but it didn't allow their doctor to speak back with them in any kind of way, which is crazy. If you're telling your doctor your symptoms and your treatment mechanism, they shouldn't stop treating you, one, and they should also be able to talk to you. So right now they have a gag order. So H.R. 1820 by Representative Earl Blumenhauer would be helpful with that, and it really does need support. Number two, H.R. 975. This is a big one. I think you'll like it, Senator. Respect Marijuana Law, State Marijuana Laws Act of 2017. is put out by Representative Republican Dana Rohrabacher out of California. And it's in Energy, Judiciary, and Commerce, and referred to the Subcommittee on Health. But that regards to not encroaching on the rights of individuals who are operating legal cannabis enterprises within states with medical programs or recreational programs, okay? And the last one is H.R. 1227. This is an awesome one. I have to give a little bit of build-up on it because it is by a great, great veteran, Thomas Garrett, Representative Thomas Garrett, Republican out of Virginia, and it's called the Ending Federal Marijuana Prohibition Act of 2017. That one especially, 1227, 975, H.R. 1820, they all need to go up for hearing. They all need to be pushed forward. The two individuals responsible for that, sir, are Congressman Bill Craft, that's the vice chair of the VA committee, and Senator and veteran Roe, who's a doctor, and the chair of the veteran committee. So those are some things that we can talk about because they relate to states' rights, they relate to veterans' health care, and they also relate to expanding our educational understanding of what prohibition really is and has done to our country.
And are all three of these guys, these are all Republicans? I know, is Blumenhauer a Republican? I know that Rohrabacher is a Republican, and the guy from Virginia is a Republican. And Blumenhauer, is he a Democrat?
He is, sir, out of Oregon.
Yeah, okay. Well, it's good to see at least one Democrat on board. You know, I would think that and it's good to see that Republicans are on board because these days – that really is the trick, right, is to get bipartisan support for anything. So evidently you guys are doing a good job at getting the message across. So what can people do to help? Well, what can we do, Brandon? What can – call our congressmen, call our senators? Do you have a website?
We do have a website. If you type in – just in Google, you can go to Weed for Warriors Project. And it'll come up. It's the easiest way just to go to Google, Weed for Warriors Project. Mm-hmm. There's a Facebook. There's a website. There's an Instagram. There's a lot of members there. Just signing on keeps active and being able to kind of connect with the community. As Valencia knows, we do different actions all the time. But one of the biggest things that we do, and I don't want this to be misunderstood, is actually help other veterans. Some of these chapters in California and throughout the state, even down here in D.C. and Maryland, we give away cannabis to veterans who are in need. They work with different programs to help make sure veterans have access to housing. We spoke about some of the health conditions here in D.C. I'm actually on the board of a program called Veterans on the Rise, which is a veterans transitional housing in place program, federal funded, almost $4 million a year, trying to do a lot of beds here in the city to help out. I would love to talk with you about how we can help to get different individuals like myself into the D.C. offices to show maybe, hey, this is how you take care of veterans properly around the country through our medical cannabis program because we don't have a veteran service coordinator here in the city. And so those issues and tying that stuff together matters. Folks can check us out, refer veterans to us, and in addition to uphold some of these causes and charges that we have going forward because the conversation has to advance. People are literally dying daily.
Well, anything I can do to help, and you've got two amazing activists in Valencia Muhammad and Adam Eidegger helping you. Both of them are both amazing organizers and amazing spokespeople for your cause. So I think you're in pretty good hands, and it seems that you have a very good grasp of what's going on, Brandon. But we do have a problem in Washington. You know, the Veterans Office here in Washington has been in a shambles for a while. I'm not even sure. Do we have a director of Veterans of the Mayor's Office of Veterans Affairs? Is there a director these days? Do you know?
I've dealt with more individuals from the Office of Returning Citizens, CSOSA, because so many veterans are locked up after episodes of PTSD or issues that they have at the home due to traumatic injuries or being in result than I ever have with any VA office. So I couldn't tell you for sure if there is one or not, but if there isn't, I think I should be a candidate for that kind of office just because of my military service, my commitment to our city, in addition to my involvement with actual veterans in the city. not only just from housing, but honestly looking at their legal issues and the things that happen. Once you come back with these injuries, if they're not treated, you really become either a statistic in death as a veteran, or you become a statistic in not having a good quality of life because you lose your wife, you may lose your job. After that, because of the circumstances, you may substance abuse, and ultimately usually ends up in jail. DC doesn't have a veterans benefit course, so there's no deferred program that works with veterans that have these injuries. And a lot of times they may not qualify for the mental health program, so they're at the court system. So it really is a problem all the way around that there's a lot of policy gaps, as I was kind of telling you about earlier, that is hard to understand if you haven't experienced it and heard enough stories.
Well, you know, we
got our work cut out for us, don't we?
Yeah. It really, in Washington, you know, one of the fights that I was involved in, Brandon, was Walter Reed. If people out there that don't know this, Walter Reed is just an amazingly large complex. It's been an Army medical facility since it was founded almost 100 years ago, and it's just recently been turned over to the city. And we fought with a group of veterans to try to get a piece of Walter Reed for veterans who were returning from as kind of a reentry a center. And I think they got a small piece, but not really what they deserve. They should have gotten much more of the facility and gotten much more of the things they wanted in that facility. Of course, the facility was turned over to developers because of the amount of money that's potential money that's involved. And I just found it a shameful incident. And I think that I was really surprised that there wasn't more support for the veterans and what they wanted to do with the facility. So, yeah, I think there's a lot of work.
I was just going to say this, guys, that recently my 18-year-old grandson, who just turned 19, joined the Army. He's stationed at Fort Drum in New York, upstate New York. And so now this is real for me. I'm saying, whoa, we thought he was going to Morehouse. We maybe thought he was going to Kentucky State. He fooled us all and said no. He wanted to follow in the footsteps of some of the men in my family that were in different branches of the armed forces. And there my grandbaby is go. He is in the armed forces. So I'm constantly, you know, reading stuff now about, you know, post-traumatic stress and just everything. Right now, everything's okay because he's not overseas. He's not in any kind of combat area. But, you know, with the current situation, the way it is, not really knowing from day to day, hour to hour, tweet by tweet, what's going to happen, you know, in terms of, yeah, you know what I'm saying? That whole situation, I'm just, you know, I don't know what's going on in terms of, you know, what may happen. There have been rumors flying around that we may be forced into a draft, you know, and then the Congress will approve another draft, and this time it will include women. It's just so much flying out there that I'm praying. I want to get this thing together now. I want everything you all need. I want to dedicate some time to helping the veterans in the District of Columbia get it, because we don't have representation in Congress, like in the manner, in full force like we should. And therefore, we've got to protect our veterans when they come back. Because they're coming back, and it's just like you said, my grandson, when I went to see my grandson at his graduation, he didn't say, this guy's from Virginia, this is Puerto Rican, this is that and that. He said, these are my brothers.
Yeah.
Your brothers? That's how they said, these are my brothers, and he meant that. These are my brothers.
He meant it. He meant it.
And they look like, and they were all different races and everything. These are my brothers, yes. And they meant it. And they called him their brother. So I'm saying, oh heck, it's on now. It's on. Yes. Valencia Muhammad. The Muhammad Mountain is going to the armed forces now. Doggone it! And I'm going to protect
the
veterans.
When he's on the other side, he's my brother now too. And I got to tell you that I'm fighting with you beforehand because it takes a big brother to take some of those hits first.
Yep. And I can certainly, you know, attest to that just in my brother's experience in Ohio. He's always a veteran first. He's always a veteran. Mm. This is a man who has a PhD, a doctorate in education, and is president of a college. But the first thing you find out about my brother is he's a veteran, and he respects all other veterans. And they really, it's a really amazing family where they come, where veterans support each other, even if they don't know each other. Because they know about the common experience. So, yeah, and I don't know why we don't support them more. We really should. They've done so much. We take our freedom for granted in this country. We take our liberty for granted. Not so much in the District of Columbia because we don't have the same freedoms that everybody else has. But in general, we do. But each one of those freedoms, each one of those liberties was paid for by the sacrifice of many brave men and women. So we need to stand up for them the way they've stood up for us. Any last words, Brandon? We want to let you go, but I want again you to tell people how they can connect with your organization and what they can do.
Well, with last words, hey everybody, please contact Senator Roe. He's a veteran and the chair of the VA committee. Congressman Bill Frost, please contact them about taking H.R. 1820 to a vote. Please support Republican Tom Garrett. Cross party lines, it doesn't matter. He's a non-post 9/11 veteran. He needs the support. He's doing some big things to try to end this prohibition to help all of us as veterans and the families of those veterans and affected by different tragedies. They can reach us at We for Warriors Project. Just go to Google, type it in. It's easy enough. We for Warriors Project, and there we are.
Well, Brandon Wyatt, thank you again for your service to America, and thank you for your service to your continuing service to veterans. We should all stand up for veterans whenever we get a chance, and I really appreciate the work that you've done. Any last words, Valencia? Anything you want to say to Miranda before we let him go?
Just know that I want to help you find out exactly what's going on here, along with Senator Brown, in terms of whether or not we have a veterans extension or office here in the district. If not, we will work post-haste to get other people involved in this, because education is power. So you just made us powerful by making us know what we may or may not have. And we want to make sure that our veterans get everything they need. And we will work with you. We don't have any problems demonstrating. I'll go back out there with you and other people. And I support We for Warriors, and we're asking other mothers out there on Mother's Day who have sons who have gone into the armed forces or have grandsons like mine who want to go in. You know, let's support these brothers then.
Absolutely. And you should know, before I let you go, Brandon, that the last director of the mayor's office, Tammy Lambert, was somebody that I recommended, and I'm happy to recommend you. So let's talk and let's get that done, because we really need not only good people in those positions, but we need very proactive people like you, because veterans need a lot of help. So thanks so much for being on our show. I hope as things progress, we can have you back, and we can talk, and we can see how this legislation is doing.
Absolutely. We'll be making sure we push it forward, and thank you for having me, and just happy Mother's Day to my mom. Oh, man, happy Mother's Day to my mom. I'm proud to get home to you, and happy Mother's Day to all the mothers of the fallen soldiers and my brothers and sisters in arms. We love you. We're still fighting.
Thank you, Brandon.
Wow.
Well, yeah, I mean, amazing, right? Amazing that he should have to go through this to get this done. It seems to me, you know, one thing I could tell you too, Valencia, is as a diabetic, you know, there's, when it comes to the drugs, that's how people want to treat me. I'm a diabetic, and they're constantly giving me drugs. Nutrition and exercise is a more important formula I found in my well-being than the drugs they give me. But the doctors, that's what they want to do. They just want to give me more pills and more pills, and this pill isn't working, take this pill. And, you know, so I can see where that happens to these guys.
Wow. So, you know, the other day when I went to the doctor, they said, Mr. Muhammad, I think you have you have pre-diabetes. That's all he needs to tell me, honey. I said, oh, shoot, I am going to be a regular at Whole Foods. I'm going all the way natural. Forget everything else. No more sodas. No this and that. I'm staying strictly with the raw foods right now. So that was like 2 days ago, and I've already started. I do not want to have to go through what a lot of other people are going through with this diabetes. You are correct.
Right, that's right.
That's what they're doing.
And I had a friend who was a registered dietitian who used to say to me, doctors don't know a lot about nutrition. And I always found that unusual. You know, I was like, how could they not know about nutrition? It's such an important thing. But the more I've dealt with these doctors and diabetes, I realize it's true. This is just kind of coming of age now that they're understanding how important nutrition is in this whole thing. And the cure for this disease. And, you know, I think about all the things my grandmother, maybe you have this experience too, Valencia. My grandmother had all sorts of things in her medicine cabinet that you don't see anymore. Things like witch hazel. And, you know, she used all sorts of herbs and stuff. And, you know, I'm sure some of it was hocus pocus, but a lot of it, you know, I think, you know, was well rooted in scientific fact, whether she knew it or not, you know, they used to use a lot of herbal remedies and other stuff. Yeah. And I think there's a lot to be found there. And we just don't exploit it enough because of this pharmaceutical medical kind of collaboration we have in America these days. But
yeah, I'm glad that I'm on your show today. I wanted to ask you a couple of questions now, considering the political climate that we're here. How have you been treated recently, you know, as because you are, quote unquote, our shadow senator, but for us, you are a real senator. How have you been treated now that the Republicans have all branches of government? What kind of reception are they giving you?
Well, you know, part of the problem that we have in this office, unfortunately, is that the people in government in the District of Columbia really don't support us. They we're elected officials, but inside the Wilson Building, they really don't support us. The mayor, for example, just gave $1 million to her own office to fight for statehood, but my office has a total budget of $79,000, including all salaries, all expenses, all everything else. You know, so we don't get treated very well by our own people. On the Hill, it's, you know, as you point out, the Democrats treat us one way and Republicans treat us another. I have a meeting set up next week with Senator Carper, who's introducing statehood legislation, but to get a meeting with a Republican senator is a lot harder for me. This is really a partisan issue. So right now, worse than the way the Republicans are treating us is the way people inside the district are treating us, in the sense that there's this feeling that we should give up right now, because even though we had an 80% plus vote on a referendum for statehood, everybody in Washington seems to be throwing up their hands saying, well, we can't do this now because you got a Republican in the White House and you got a Republican House and a Republican Senate. But, you know, I try to think to myself, I look to the civil rights movement because this is a civil rights issue.
That's what I was going to say. I was going to say, before the civil, you know, by me being a descendant of people who were enslaved in this country, I just think anything is possible. So when I look at Negroes, as I call them, when I see black politicians and they're, oh, we can't do this and we can't do that, I'm saying they forget their history. Know your history so you won't repeat the past. My whole thing is, we came out of slavery when all odds were against us. My people were free, doggone it. We got freedom. Why can't you put some blood, sweat, and tears and have hope in there? We can do this. If they just stay focused, if Muriel Bowser doesn't just look at it as, you know, I want to put all my political pundits and people who like me up in there so they can tell me, yes, yes, I love you, in this million-dollar office. What she really needs is, you know, people like you. Fund the project.
Yes,
absolutely. We can move it forward. Yeah,
absolutely.
I'm glad you brought this to our attention again.
And you know, I think to myself, were there not people that must have come to Martin Luther King when Lyndon Johnson was elected and he was an avowed segregationist in Congress? Must there not have been people that came to Dr. King and said, well, it's hopeless now, you know, but yet he was able to get Johnson to sign the 64 Civil Rights Act and the 65 Voting Rights Act. Mm-hmm. I mean, these are right. I mean, if somebody came to Rosa Parks in the 1950s and said, look, Montgomery, Alabama is segregated, just sit on the back of the bus for now and keep your mouth shut. Would she have done that? You know, you can't stop a civil rights movement. You can't say, well, we're going to put this on hold and we'll get back to it when the environment's right. No, it's either right or it's wrong, and it's wrong, and we need to stand up for it, and you're absolutely right about that.
If that was the case, I would be in chains, my dog, and so.
No,
I wouldn't have been in chains, baby.
Let me tell you something. If I had 100 Valencia Muhammads standing behind me, we'd be a state in no time at all. And that's the problem.
About.
Is you know, if I brought together all the really effective activists on the statehood movement, you would know each and every one of them, Valencia, because they've been the same people for the past 30 years. You know, people like Anise Jenkins, they've been, the same people are out there that have always been out there. But unfortunately, we need new people. We need them pushing hard. And we need to not give money to ourselves. You know, the mayor said to me, I said, you need to put some money into this. And she said, I gave money to statehood. And I said, no, you gave money to yourself. You didn't give money to statehood. You gave it to your own office. That's not getting the job done. So you're right. We need to do that. Well, before we're running out of time here, but is there anything else you want to talk about? You're a mom. This is your day. So, anything else on your mind?
And the only thing I want to say to mothers is take care of yourself. One of the things, I'm 65, going on 66 in a couple of months, is that I work for the Census Bureau, and I go out there and I do census surveys on health and other matters. And I talk to a lot of people who are over 90 years old. You ask these women, how did you do it? They're looking good. How did you do it, ma'am? How did you do it, sir? And a lot of times, you know what they say? They stop worrying. At some point, they just said they're not going to let anything bother them anymore. They decided they were going to be at peace with themselves. And they were just going to think about themselves and the fact that all they had in front of them was heaven and God. That's all. Can't go
That's
backwards.
Right.
Can't be young anymore. Go forward. What's before you? And when they focused on what was before them, and they didn't let the squabbles in the family or anything else bother them. And a lot of the women said a long time ago, they realized by the time they were 50, 55, that the men didn't have their act together, they were never going to have it together. And they would just say that they were focused. And that's what I want to say to women. You got to love yourself. Today is Mother's Day, but today is love yourself, mother, first. That's what you got to do.
Absolutely. I don't think it could be better said, and we certainly had one of those women in my life, and my grandmother, who lived well into her 80s, was ambulatory, lived on her own until the day she passed, but she ran the family. You know, I had this crazy Italian grandmother. I had this crazy Italian grandmother, and I tell people that I lock myself in a room once a year and I watch all the Godfather movies back to back because they remind me of my grandmother. My grandmother was like the Don Corleone of my family. You know, it really didn't matter what you wanted, Valencia. It really didn't matter what, you know, she was the big boss. And until the day she died, she was the big boss. And I think that's one of the things that kept her going, is she had a purpose, and she never rested. To show you how crazy my grandmother was, when I was 4 years old, she took me to New York to see a parade, and I got lost. I'm sorry, I was six, and I got lost, and I was lost for 14 hours in New York City.
And
they found me. Luckily, I was in the first grade, and I had had the policeman as your friend, little thing. And I went up to a New York City cop who immediately took custody of me. And, you know, but it took 14 hours to find me, because in those days there was no internet, right? They just called on the phone and stuff. But the best thing is she didn't call my mother. And when we got back home to Newark, we lived in Newark, New Jersey, my mother said to her, "Mom, why didn't you call me?" And she looked at her and said, "What the hell could you have done?" You know?
True.
Why is this any of your business? This is my grandson, you know? She took custody of all of us. And on that note, to my grandmother Rose, wherever in the universe she may be, God bless you for all you did. And God bless you, Valencia Muhammad, for you and the sacrifices you've made.
Thank you for having me on.
We're going to leave you tonight with and I'm going to dedicate this song to my wife, Pat, to Valencia, to Maria, to all the mothers out there. Here's a song from Celine Dion to take us out, which I think says it all. It's called "Because You Loved Me." Thanks, Valencia.
You're welcome, sir. Thanks very much.
For all those times you stood by me, for all the truth that you made me see, for all the joy you brought to my life, for all the wrong that you made right, for every dream you made to come true, for all the love I found in you, I'll be forever thankful, baby. You're the one.
Representation in the capital of this nation. 200 years of exploitation. Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right.